Okay, prayer, I think. It's about, you know, we had this little discussion last Sunday, during the Sunday feast class, about quarreling. Pranava Prabhu, he mentioned how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta set up the Gaudiya mission with the GVC and told them not to quarrel. But still, they had differences of opinion. And at least it sounded to me that some thought that differences of opinion is the same as quarrel. So I just raised my voice or made a little comment that differences of opinion doesn't mean necessarily quarrel, because you can handle differences of opinion in civilized ways. And then I thought afterwards that yes, that's what we find in I would say in Asian traditions more, that for instance there are different philosophies, different schools, different branches of schools. There are Buddhists and same in China, the Buddhists, Taoists, Muslims, Christians. It was always like that down there, that different schools and teachings coexisted. And of course, that didn't mean they had the same opinions about everything. So what we learned that in India, the tradition is that you got that scholar, important person over there, teaching a certain philosophy or whatever, and another one over there teaching another philosophy. Well, what do? I mean, there's no use of quarreling, but rather what they did or do, I hope still, is, okay, let's sit down, meet, and you talk, and then you talk, and then there can be a debate. And I've sat through, and as an audience in Sweden here also, academic philosophical debates of people who didn't disagree, who didn't agree with each other. But then there was a mediator in between, and it was all civilized. And afterwards, well, maybe one learned something from the other and vice versa, and understood a little bit more about the other one, so that at least there may be a little less differences of opinion. And I would say that when you do it that way, then gradually truth prevails, because you're not sitting there in a debate in order to win and defeat the other one. But that's what generally quarrels are about. I'm right, you're wrong. Because you don't speak the same way I do, think the same way, or at least I don't think you do. you don't look the same way, and so on and so forth. And there you got wars between religions and all that, which we have to admit are more common in the West, if you look at history. So, yeah, maybe the East and the West got things to learn from each other still. And what we all have to learn from history and from the wise ones. In other words, we can't force each other to change opinions about things. We can't force each other to shut up or force people not to listen to that person that we think is wrong. But we can say our opinion, trying to bring about a more true level of enlightenment, more correct facts, and so on, more logic and reason, and above all, I would say, more understanding, respect, love, which is what this wisdom is all about, really. So that also wins in the end. Truth prevails in that it is what lasts and what works and what ultimately makes sense. Maybe someone formulates it in one way according to their culture, and others another way according to their group, their tradition. But if you dig a bit deeper and continue like that, in other words, having dialogue, debate, perhaps, but in peace and with the focus on which actual learned and intelligent and wise people should have focus on, the truth, rather than winning, defeating an enemy, an opponent, which is not really a Brahminical behavior, but more like a Kshatriya behavior, to use the Vedic Indian terms. So this is especially, I guess, directed to the Brahmanas, the intellectuals, those who are sworn to, which they should be, the truth, knowledge, facts, not just to defend some narrative or whatever accepted tradition, which may be true or not. So I would say that this is the first thing that one should start with in order to make a society healthy. And therefore I agree with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati that you should not quarrel, young men and women, and not the us oldies either. Which does not mean that I'm saying, and he is saying, that now you should all have the same opinion about everything. Because that's where it becomes a little tricky. Whose opinion is the right one, and so on and so forth. Well, it's of course, then Bhaktisiddhanta could say, it's my opinion, you follow that one. And well, that's how it should ideally work, I guess, that the followers, students of a teacher, at least in that Indian tradition, they simply accept the version given by the teacher. Now, one can continue with that one, say, but then if you find out later that the teacher was wrong with something, certain point here and there, what should we do then? Should we accept that which everyone else kind of shows us is obvious fact and truth? Or should we, above everything else, stick to the version of our guru, who may now have left the world? So there are these little tricky things. But again, as I sometimes say, and people take it this way, that way, that a guru is not right because he's guru, but he's guru because he's right, speaking the truth, meaning someone who's actually learned and wise speaks the truth, understands the truth. That's the purpose of learning. And then is qualified to be a teacher, which guru means. It's as simple as that. But then there are always differences of opinion, and therefore maybe, or at least it was there, Bhaktisiddhanta allowed, well, it was 64 branches of the Gaudiya mission tree, probably out of geographic separation rather than ideological separation or philosophical, whatever, but still certain autonomy. And if you don't like, if you don't agree with me, my view on things, then go to the other one over there who you agree with. And again, some, they wouldn't want to say that, but rather, you should not go to him because he's wrong, he doesn't agree with me. But then that is more often than not, I would say, motivated by and driven by desire, a desire to keep those disciples, keep those followers following me, because they give dakshin, donations, and they do services. Look here, they are doing so much for me. Of course, you're not saying that, but, you know. So again, just as with the love of truth, a brahmana, a wise person, a real, someone who's really qualified to be a guru, has to first of all be free from that greed or desires or to be served or given things or some or other profiting of his or her job. But to be very simple, humble, and free in that sense, which first of all means freedom from lust and desire and greed and all of that, envy. So therefore, being an intellectual, a brahmana, for instance, it means to know Brahman, to know the real existence, reality, and live happily by that. Because it's not just a knowledge, It's life. It's an insight. It's sattvic. It's life that is happy and satisfying independently of material pleasures, gratifications. But simply the true happiness of the self. That's why I call self-realization. So these things that we spoke about today and last Sunday, I think are very important, and I'm turning to the intellectuals here, the smart ones. You have a great responsibility and service waiting here to do for the people wherever you live, your people. And that includes that responsibility of actually practicing as you teach by your own example, and so on. It goes for us all. So, Hare Krishna.